Good evening, everyone. Good evening. You've tuned into Paradigm Shifters. My name is Veronica Entwistle, and I love talking to various people that are making a difference in the shifting collective of our species on the planet at this time. And I have a really wonderful guest tonight, really a help. This is going to help you in the new year, believe me. This is the author of a book called Radical Forgiveness, Colin Tipping. Colin, welcome to Paradigm Shifters.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
I should say welcome to Shifting Paradigms.
Yeah.
So, you know what? One of the things that stuck to me, you know, I'm an intuitive and I've gone through an awful lot of spiritual exploration. So I love your book because it brings the consciousness of frequency and the frequency of our intention, our existence, and what we're doing with our mind and so on into the alchemical process of forgiveness. Right. I love that. And at one point, you said one of the most, what is it? I think you probably have a better way of putting this, but one of the big key places that I wanted to start was about the wounded healer. And I gathered you referred to the whole species as well as individuals, using that as a pivotal term. Am I right about that?
Yeah, I think so, in that we're, you know, we're all wounded in one way or another, and of course that, and that's not by accident, that's by choice, I believe, as a, you know, that's what we came into experience as part of the human condition in order to transform it, but so we're wounded in that sense. But we're also wounded healers for other people. So that's what we're doing for each other, is bring each one of us back to wholeness.
So you're saying the actual wounding, for example, let's pick, I want to use this as a key into radical forgiveness. So let's pick a kind of abuse or something, say battering. Let's pick battering.
Mm-hmm.
Child that's battering, that's being battered. Can you give us the process of radical forgiveness on someone who's experienced that?
Okay, well, let me first tell you or speak about the difference between traditional forgiveness and radical forgiveness in order to give a context for that. Otherwise, it's not going to make much sense.
Okay.
The idea of forgiveness is quite different from traditional forgiveness. So traditional forgiveness and radical forgiveness are quite different things, so I think I need to explain what that is first. Traditional forgiveness, of course, is what we're all used to and what we've been brought up to imagine is the true essence of forgiveness, which is to try to let bygones be bygones, even though we still believe that something wrong happened to us, but we're going to do our best to try to get over it and get beyond the anger and resentment. With radical forgiveness, it's quite different. We do all of those things. We do decide to forgive, and we do bring to the situation the best of human attributes, such as compassion and empathy and mercy and all those things that we try to bring to the forgiveness process. But it goes one step further, a giant step further that traditional forgiveness cannot go. And that is to recognize, or at least to be open to the possibility that what happened was in fact divinely inspired and was meant to happen that way, and that there are no accidents, and that we have in fact co-created these situations for ourselves as learning experiences and for our soul's growth. So that's the context in which we're talking about forgiveness here. And if you ask me about child abuse, which is often the thing that comes up for most people, they say, well, surely that's unforgivable.
Or the other thing is some people use it as a lifetime's identity.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So what we need to say to that, I mean, it's very difficult for us to say to somebody who's been severely wounded through sexual abuse or child abuse or whatever, you know, everything was perfect and it was all just divinely guided and you shouldn't worry about it. That's a very difficult thing to say to anybody who has
That's
been
for sure.
severely wounded mm-hmm. in any way at all. And so the first thing to say is that's not what I do because it almost counts as spiritual abuse to go up to someone and say something like that. You have to gentle them into this whole idea that there is spiritual purpose in everything. And even though sexual abuse or the Holocaust seems to be beyond forgiveness in any form or another. What we have to say is that if it works for one thing, it works for everything, even though we don't know why and can't give any sort of rational explanation for it.
Mm-hmm.
So to go back to the original point then that you were wanting me to expand on, which is the wounded healer, somebody who has had that experience will find it very difficult to heal that experience without somebody else coming along and helping us. And 9 times out of 10, it'll be someone else who has had that same wound who is able to acknowledge it and to be open to sharing it with that other person, so that there is a sort of a sharing of the wound.
Or a vibrational lineup, really.
Yes. But then one or the other has to move beyond it and say, yeah, but you know, this story, even though it's your identity and has been mine for some time, we have to learn to let it go. And we have to learn to move beyond that identity as a wounded person. And the only way that I know how to do that in a very thorough way and in a way that completely eradicates the energy of victimhood around it is to be open to the possibility that there was a reason why that happened in the first place, and that the reason is spiritual in its origin and its purpose, and that you as a soul chose that experience for your soul's growth or for your karmic lesson, however you want to frame it, but there is a sort of an accountability here, and that you had helped to co-create that situation for your own learning. But you can't do that until somebody's ready to actually hear it, of course.
Yes, I like the story that you begin the book Radical Forgiveness with, which is of your sister Jill, who was having marriage problems, and it's really well written how you enter her awareness of, in quotes, victimhood or whatever.
Yes.
And then you gently move it to a time of acceptance. I really thought that was graceful and really touched me.
And it's very, very important that we honor the person's story in the beginning. That's really the first stage of the radical forgiveness process, is to listen to the story or to tell the story. The person whose story it is tells the story to someone else or to themselves if they're doing a worksheet, and so that story is validated and witnessed.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it happened and it hurt. And then we can move on from there. But it's very important that we begin from where we are.
I think one of the things that I'm thinking as you talk is how interesting it is that there have been, for example, so many new awarenesses of different abuses that used to be submerged in people's psyche.
Yeah.
And what's happening in the collective, you see what I mean, is talking about woundings and forgiveness, and the impact of forgiveness on the whole collective is also profound.
Hey? Yeah.
Going back to Auschwitz or any of those.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, you know, I hazard a guess here, but I'm pretty sure that child abuse and sexual abuse and even incest has been around a long time, but we never knew about it because it was completely hidden. But over the last, what would you say, 25, 30 years, it's come to the surface for healing.
Mm-hmm.
And so at a mass level, you know, it's coming up for us all to look at it and to recognize that we're all implicated in it, all have a hand in creating it, but now we can let it go, so to speak, as a collective.
And to actually come to what the outcome of these wounds, let's go back to the wounded healer, what is the outcome for people who become conscious of their wounds? It's kind of interesting.
That they realize that they're not wounds, that they're not, or at least they're not wounds that somebody has inflicted upon them, but they have chosen to have those experiences as a way of learning and growing. And we don't know necessarily what those lessons are that we have chosen to have. All we know is that we've created circumstances which appear on the surface to be tragic and undesirable and wrong and every other description that we want to give it. But the fact of the matter is that we've chosen those experiences for our soul's growth, and we may even have colluded with other souls prior to coming into this incarnation to do those things for us, so that we can experience this form of separation.
And then I think your book includes that when people go through, for example, radical forgiveness process with someone or someone's, then they become more empowered, do they not?
Well, yeah, of course. Once you become accountable for your own life, for having created all of the circumstances of your own life, then what you come to understand is that you can create your life differently then. So instead of hanging out in the victim consciousness and blaming everybody else for your unhappiness and for your lack of whatever it is that you're lacking, you come into your power as a person who can co-create what you want in your life. So you can begin to use radical manifestation as a way to move beyond these woundology stories.
Mm-hmm. How did you get into all of this, Colin? I mean, this book is so wonderful. It's so gripping and has so much really practical information.
Well, that was my intent, was to make it simple and practical so that anybody could do it. And that's the main thing, because with traditional forgiveness, there's this idea that only a very few people can ever achieve forgiveness. And the proof of that is that anybody that manages to do it in any significant way gets to be interviewed by Oprah. So it only furthers the idea that forgiveness is special. It's only for people who have very saintly qualities about them, whereas that's with radical forgiveness, that's not true at all. Anybody can do it, and it's easy, and it's a straightforward step-by-step process.
Well, and years ago I took a forgiveness course, and they said that forgiveness to mental health is like vaccination to physical health.
Yeah, absolutely. It absolutely is. But as we generally understand it, there's very few people who recognize that they can do it, and very few people achieve it. And the reason that they don't achieve it using traditional method is that it doesn't give up the idea that something wrong happened.
Mm-hmm.
It keeps you in victim consciousness, because you're all the time still trying to say, even though I'm trying to forgive you, you did this bad thing to me.
Mm-hmm.
So those two are very contradictory ideas. You can't move into forgiveness if you still are in a place of condemnation. And the hurt and the pain, if you give it power, is much stronger than your desire to forgive. So that's why it takes 20 or 30 years to forgive if it ever happens at all. And I doubt that it ever does, or very few people. So with traditional with radical forgiveness, however, it's immediate, because it's an energy thing.
Mm.
We actually dissolve the energy pattern that has given rise, that is around the wound, that keeps the story alive and keeps us retelling it over and over and over and acting it out over and over in a pattern. So once we do the radical forgiveness process, it collapses that energy field and it's immediately gone, because with energy there is no time and space, and so it goes immediately.
But there's still some changes required in people's coping techniques, right?
Well, possibly, because there's always the tendency to want to go back into the story because it's like an old friend. We use the stories to manipulate people. You know, I'm an adult child of an alcoholic, therefore I am allowed to be whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so we manipulate and control through using these stories and making them our identity. So when we do forgive them, sometimes we want to go back in them. Into them and still kind of act out the same story, but it doesn't fit anymore. It doesn't feel right, because it's not true. You're not an adult child of an alcoholic. You are who you are right now in this moment.
Mm-hmm.
But you asked me how I got into it.
Yes, I'm interested.
And the reason how I developed it was that I was a hypnotherapist back in the early 90s, 80s and 90s, and I was attracting a lot of people who had cancer, and I didn't really know why, because I had no experience of it. But I also was getting interested in the whole concept of forgiveness. And we started doing retreats for people who had cancer, and very soon realized that when we read the research, the reason a lot of people have cancer is that they have a very hard time forgiving and have developed a strategy of dealing with their emotions by repressing them and stuffing them down and never dealing with them, especially grief and especially anger and rage. So we needed a way to help these people come to a place of forgiveness with all these issues that they had pushed down many, many years ago, and which was now coming out as a disease process like cancer. So we had to have something that worked quickly and that was easy and that didn't need any sort of psychotherapy process to take them back into their wound as such. And so that's how we developed radical forgiveness.
Does it not take you into your wound a little bit?
A little bit, but you don't have to go digging up the past to know what the original wound was, because if there's something that's going on in your life now, it's nearly always a reflection of that original wound. So you forgive that, and then that clears up the original as well. So if you've got even the cancer itself needed to be forgiven, was a way of healing that wound.
And so how were the results?
Excuse me a minute. Let me have a cough.
Go ahead.
this is the third interview I've done today, so I'm starting to get a little croaky here.
Oh.
You can edit this out, right?
Yeah, we can do that.
Yeah.
That's the nice thing about a pre-record.
Okay, I got me a glass of water. Okay, what were you saying?
How were the results with your retreat with people with cancer?
Oh, well, I mean, first of all, it was hard to get anybody to come. That was the problem because, you know, they've been avoiding that kind of thing all their life. So it was very difficult for them to be able to see the value in it. But once we got them there, they loved it. And, of course, it made a huge difference to their whole experience of their illness. Now, I'm not saying that there was any cures. We're not allowed to use that word, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
But we made a huge difference to people's lives, and I think what we did was a lot of emotional and spiritual healing, which may or may not have extended their lives a lot.
Did you bring
in
the families?
Some cases, actually, you know, that there are some people that went through the workshop 15 years ago who are still alive today. Now, I can't say that I made that difference, but who knows?
Well, you can start a ball rolling. Did they bring their families as well?
Yeah, they brought their spouses usually, or their supporter.
Mm-hmm.
So that was good for them too, because for them to begin to see that this was something that was needing to happen and that it was a loving message. At one point I had a little workshop which I called Saying Yes to Cancer. Not saying no to it, saying yes to it, because the cancer is telling us something and is giving us an opportunity to learn and to let go of all that pain that they've been stuffing for years and years and years.
So I guess people resisted that, did they?
At first, but not once they really got to understand it and to see it. They saw it as a liberation.
And did you experience people looking and seeming liberated to a degree?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, you can imagine the difference between the person at the front end of the retreat when they're all consumed by their cancer story,
mm-hmm.
and then at the end of the week, they just, you know, they were full of joy and life.
Oh, isn't that a wonderful thing? So you moved from England over to the States, and didn't you get involved in, well, tell us more about what that step led you to.
What, doing the cancer retreat, you mean?
Yeah. They were in England, weren't they?
No, they were over here. I was really not into any of this stuff before I left England in 1984. I was a teacher and I did counseling work, but I didn't do anything of a spiritual nature and no religious background whatsoever. So this was pretty much a new life for me. So it was
So what triggered you? I mean, it's very interesting. The whole thing is alchemical. The whole thing is triggering something in each of us. And it's right in your soul journey, isn't it?
Yep.
So what catalyzed that?
And, I guess it had to happen fairly late in life for me. Actually, you can see it in my astrological chart that it was not going to happen until I was in my 50s.
Oh, that's great.
I didn't
great.
Know that at the time, but now that I know a bit more about astrology and can look back at it, I can see that it wasn't going to find me. And I really do feel that it found me rather than I found it.
And did you begin with hypnotherapy? Is that what you started?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, I became a hypnotherapist, and that was the beginning of it. And I seemed to be attracting these people who had cancer, and found an interest in forgiveness as well. And then brought those two things together once I realized that's why I was attracted to them.
That's really exciting, isn't it?
Yeah.
That it finds you. I like that a lot.
Yeah, it found me. So, you know, a lot of people want me to have a big story that I tell, that, you know, big forgiveness story, but I really don't. I had good parents, and I've had a couple of divorces, but then who hasn't, you know?
Well, you got to stretch and grow in this time, you know. But you must have had some kind of learning, because what I'm learning, well, I know this anyway from my own experiences, but I love this book, and it's reminding me that almost all our relationships are catalytic in some way or another.
Yeah.
Do you have anything to say about that? Because it looks like your whole life has been like a catalytic change force to work with that in other people
as
well.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, everything, looking back now, everything that I'd done, you know, had led me to this. Even coming to America, I don't think I would have done it had I stayed in England with the kind of people that I was with, and I just don't think it would have happened. Coming over here was what I needed to do. I didn't really know why I was coming.
Did you come on your own?
Yeah.
Great.
Gave up everything. Gave up a job and all my belongings, all my friends. So once I got here, I thought, well, God, what have I done?
Well,
this is ridiculous. Why did I do that? You know.
And why did you? I mean, what was the rationale at the time?
Well, then, you know, now that I look back at it, I came here to do this work, but I didn't know at the time, and I was very depressed about the move I had made.
Were you coming out of a divorce? That's often usually.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But going back to
break, but.
And going back to wounding, isn't that the kind of thing where we tear out of our comfort zone, and then
absolutely,
yeah.
Yeah,
and then we maybe take courageous steps or something.
Yep.
And so,
but the thing was, you know, I didn't know why I was doing it. I mean, I thought I did. I had some rational explanation, but it made no sense at all once I really, really looked at it. It was spirit was just intending to get me here, and I had no real say in it. Really, I was just dragged here.
And you're not sorry now, are you?
Oh, no, of course not.
That was like 20 years ago or 25 years ago?
25 years ago now, almost.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So you have an institute. I'd like to hear about that as well.
Well, you know, once we started doing the workshops finished in the early 90s. Once I'd written the book in 97, the weekend workshops took off, and these were for everybody. They weren't just for cancer retreats. We look upon these workshops now as cancer prevention, because if you can clear this energy out of your field, then you're not likely to get cancer. If your emotional body is free of this kind of energy, then it's unlikely that you're ever going to create this kind of disease process. But anyway, once we started the workshops, what was I going to say? What was your question?
How about your institute?
Oh, the institute. Yeah, we decided that you know, there's only so much that we—that's my wife and I—can do on our own. We needed to leverage this by training other people to teach what we teach, or at least to coach other people to go through the process. So we.
And is she also a hypnotherapist?
No. She's a breath worker.
Oh, good.
Certified breath worker. So
that's
we do that
thing.
In the workshops as well. Mm-hmm. But then we started to train people who could coach other people in the process and take people through the use of the tools which make it happen. It's the tools that actually make this thing work. And so we created an institute here, and later on we have an institute in Germany, we have an institute in Poland, one in Australia.
Where's here?
Well, it's really it's basically a virtual institute. We don't have a big building or anything, but we create the programs for people. That most of the training now is done online, and people can sign up and do it online. So it's a virtual institute.
Well, I love the worksheet, the workbook kind of approach too, which for people who are listening, it's like it takes you through point by point how to assess the woundings that you're fighting with or things that are repeating in your life, right?
Yeah.
And
it's essential that we use the tools. That's what makes it so easy for people to do. If you try to do it in your head, then it doesn't work because at that point you're still trying to use your mental and your intellect, and that really doesn't work. When you use the tools and the worksheets, then what you're doing is actually using your spiritual intelligence to make it happen, and that's different.
Mm-hmm.
Your spiritual intelligence is that's the part of you that's connected to universal intelligence, and you get direct access, if you like, to spirit through using those tools. I call it secular prayer, actually.
Secular prayer.
Secular prayer, because this is a non-religious process.
Mm-hmm.
It does require that you have a belief, or at least are open to the possibility that there is a higher power than just our own ego. Mm-hmm. But that's all of it.
Thank heaven, eh?
Yeah.
Well, I like that you refer to, because I call myself an energy counselor, and I like that you refer to the shift in frequencies and normal forgiveness done at a certain vibrational level isn't quite as spiritually connected as what you're calling in. You're getting people to move up to a higher frequency, are you not?
Yes. Well, not necessarily. Yeah, I guess higher. You could say higher. It's different, though.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a mental energy.
Mm.
Mental energy can be pretty high in certain circumstances, but what we're doing here is shifting to a different vibration or a different frequency, a spiritual frequency, shall we say. And so we're just using another part of our psyche. I don't want to use the better or higher words because then it makes it sound, you know, superior.
Yeah.
Everybody has spiritual intelligence. It doesn't matter who you are. How much mental intelligence you have is irrelevant. Everybody has spiritual intelligence, and we can all tap into it. So you don't have to be in any way special to be able to do this work.
I think the thing that I liked about when I was reading it is that it really is our focus, isn't it? It's like holding yourself open to a bigger picture is...
Yeah, different paradigm.
Yeah.
And you're about paradigm shifting, and It is a completely different paradigm. The paradigm that we're used to is that life is just a set of random circumstances, and things happen to us that are unfortunate if we're in the wrong place at the wrong time, and that people come into our lives and do damage to us, and it's, you know, we married the wrong person.
And some seeds fall upon the rocks.
Yeah, and so that's the old paradigm. But this paradigm is that there are no mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And everything is working out exactly how it needs to work out for whatever spiritual reason, and we don't know what those reasons are.
You know, it's interesting. This brings me perfectly to the section of the book that talks about Mother Teresa and Lady Diana,
uh-huh.
and all of that, and how you explained, you know, they died right around the same time.
Yeah.
And if you'd like to talk about how Lady Diana, what happened in society as a result of the wounding, you know.
Yeah, well, that's in the chapter on mission,
mm-hmm.
the idea that we come into this experience with a mission. And I used her story as an illustration of somebody who did come in with a pretty big mission, which was to open the heart chakra of England.
I thought that was brilliant.
Yeah. And it didn't occur to me until the day of her death. But it did seem to me that for the first time ever, English people were giving themselves permission to feel their emotions fully and to really open their heart and express their feelings instead of sitting on them, which is what they've been used to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that this was a way for somebody with a mission, not just to help one other person, but to help a whole generation of people in a certain country. And that Diana's willingness to go in front of a camera and share her wound was a big part of that, that she was the wounded healer for the whole country.
Mm-hmm.
People identified with that wound, and then when she died, and then it gave full expression to that, and it opened the heart chakra of England. So
it was another alchemical, on a cellular level, it was a real alchemical force for the species, for our paradigm, if you will.
Yes, exactly.
Back into that.
Yeah.
That, I thought that was pretty amazing. And Mother Teresa, what do you think about various people like that who were amazingly spiritual? Do you feel like there's a similar impact or?
Yeah, they have a different impact. That hers was more of a, as an example of how to live a spiritual life, than Diana's mission, which was to behave the way she did in order to trap us into confronting our own woundedness. But I just thought it was kind of odd that those two women died almost exactly at the same time.
I did too. I thought it was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I guess the conjecture, I don't have any answers for that, but it seems
right.
Like it might be a part of the same picture where one
exactly.
had more of the earth one and one had the spiritual one.
Yes, exactly.
Because Mother Teresa was also quite wounded in some ways, wasn't she?
Oh, yeah. And very disconnected, as it turns out. I don't know whether you've read anything about that, but she felt very disconnected from God and couldn't find God.
I remember in her 60s, she was I read something where she wrote that she was just black inside and felt like she'd been deserted.
Yeah.
That
yeah,
everything
her
she...
letters came out, I think, a couple of years ago that indicated that she felt forsaken.
Yeah. And I wonder if that's part of the deal where you're in your wounding, you're looking for what the real presence of your journey and what it is you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
It's very interesting, isn't it? Do you have other major characters? Like, what was Hitler doing? Well, I'm not being cheeky.
I get this one a lot, but...
That is a bit cheeky, right?
No, I mean, I've done seminars based on it, actually, but I mean, it's such a big subject that it could easily upset people, but... I was doing a workshop one time and there were some Jewish people in there and they kept on and on, what about the Holocaust, what about the Holocaust? And eventually I said, if you're willing to just hold on that particular thing, I'll promise to do another seminar at the end of this workshop and we'll spend 3 or 4 hours going into this. So they agreed, so it enabled us to get through the workshop. But then when we did it, then we said, you know, well, let's imagine what this might have been. So we said that, you know, the Jewish race had been feeling victimized for centuries and had been acted out upon them. In other words, they'd been made to feel victims. And something needed to heal that. So we needed a very strong soul with a lot of love who could come in and victimize them in a very, very big way, so that they could heal their victim consciousness.
Hmm.
And so that's where Hitler
I never
came
think
in.
Of Hitler having a lot of love. At
the soul level, he must have had an enormous amount of love to be able to do what he did and to take the amount of negative energy that people project onto him, because he's the epitome of everybody's sense of evil.
Hmm.
Now, that's just a story that I make up. I don't know whether it's true, but you did ask me.
I take the consequence. No,
you know, in case there's anybody feeling upset about it, I'm just saying I make it up that's why that happened. I have no idea whether it's true or not, but I'll tell you what, all these Jewish people that were in my workshop for we took 3 hours to develop this idea, they loved it. And one woman said, I'm going to teach this to children because that's the Jewish people need this.
Well, one of the things that occurs to me as I go through your book is that you have said over and over in different situations, I don't mean you're repeating yourself, I mean in different situations you're saying the person loved you enough to bring that healing up into possibility.
Yeah, yeah.
And I feel like a lot of us could benefit. I benefited tremendously from that. Already, you know.
The big example you mentioned earlier on about the chapter one, you know, Jill's story, my sister's story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, her husband loved her enough to be uncharacteristically cruel. He is anything but a cruel man.
Mm-hmm.
But for whatever, you know, for what Jill needed at that time, he acted out in a way that she interpreted as being cruel and would have left him had she not come and done the radical forgiveness work. But as soon as she understood what was going on and how she had co-created that and attracted him in to do that for her, he stopped that behavior immediately and became his normal, loving, sensitive, caring person.
So it wasn't necessary for him to be that way any longer.
No, because the purpose was done. He did that for her because he loved her enough to do it. At the soul level, of course, he didn't know what he was doing. It was totally unconscious. Mm-hmm. But at the soul level, he loved her enough to do it at great cost to himself because he was in a great deal of discomfort at that time.
Mm-hmm. He was going through his own issues.
Yeah, but he was a healing angel for my sister, and they're still happily married, and that was 15 years ago.
But the thing that occurs to me about that, and I'd love it if you have some other stories, but it's that we're on this planet, or maybe you've got a better perspective than this, but I feel like we're on this planet to get all this stuff worked out, aren't we?
Yes, exactly. We come here with those issues to work through and oftentimes even agree to before we come in. So you do this for me and I'll do this for you.
What's interesting to me, we go back to Lady Diana and I go, but this is working on a collective basis as well as an individual basis, isn't
it? Yeah.
So what do you think is going to happen with humanity? Where do you think we're headed? Simple question.
Yeah, really, in 2 minutes. I'm very optimistic. Mm-hmm. I think that I'm hoping that within my lifetime that the whole human race will wake up to the truth and we say, hey, experiment's over. Mm-hmm. We can have heaven on earth, and this is who we are anyway, and we've just been playing this game to bring us to this awareness and to this point where we really get that we're one and that there is only love, and now we can start living it. It's been an interesting experiment, interesting schooling. But it's over, guys.
What do you
think? It might happen around 2012.
Maybe. Yeah, I'd like that. I've got my hat ready to party.
Yeah, that's right. But I think it's just been a long, great long experiment, and it's soon to be over once we really get it. Now, and I think radical forgiveness is a way to speed up that process of getting it.
That's what I'm thinking. So I'm going to say some political things, and if you don't want to answer them, you don't have to. But
okay.
What about like Bush's role? Are you willing to say something about that?
Yeah, I mean, if you think into, I wrote a book called The Radical Incarnation, and that was really indicating that it was a story about a soul who was going to come in and become the president of the United States and bring the United States to a place of breakdown prior to breaking through.
And Is that an inspired
totally
fiction?
Yeah, fictional, but mm-hmm. the character, you would probably recognize the character as George W. Bush.
Aha!
But the point about it was that this soul would be doing an absolutely necessary job to transform the consciousness of the planet, because America is probably the country that's going to lead the world in waking up. But it would take a breakdown in order to do it. See, if you think in terms of a healing crisis, nothing really changes until you go through a healing crisis.
Which means we drop our identity with certain security aspects and
well,
start to create.
Well, now. You could say that, the financial stuff that we're going through right now is the beginning of the breakdown, and George W. was in that, along with Saddam Hussein, who was mirroring America's shadow for us all. Mm-hmm. But we didn't get that, of course. But he was. Everything that we hated Saddam for is everything that we've done ourselves and won't admit to. So it's the American shadow that Saddam was mirroring for us.
Mm-hmm.
So Saddam and George got together and said, okay, let's bring this thing to a place where everything goes unstable, so people will have to start thinking about who they are and what truth is and
what truth is, for sure. So what do we do, Colin? Do we then, like, for example, do we then go in and do radical forgiveness on Bush?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, you can come to my website and do a specific worksheet on Saddam Hussein, Osama bin Laden, George Bush, and any other character that you blame for being less than okay.
Huh.
And you'll realize that those are souls that have come in for specific reasons, and they're not making mistakes. So it makes your politics very neutral when you start to look at things this way.
I don't think it's neutral. I think it's very, very powerful.
It doesn't mean to say that you're not, that you become apolitical, mm-hmm. because you're still human and we're still playing the human game. So we still do what we need to do to get the kind of people into power that we want and make them do what we want them to do. But you stop dividing them into goodies and baddies.
Well, it's interesting because as you talk about forgiveness, for example, it strikes me as politically very, very empowering to have as many of us as possible unhook from the things that bring in lessons over and over again.
Yeah.
Then we become the heaven on earth potential, right?
Yeah.
What do you think Obama is? Do you think he's a catalyst for... He's not so nasty. Excuse me, Mr. Bush, I'm going to do my forgiveness exercises.
It's hard to know exactly. I think he might turn out to be a tragic figure at the beginning. In mm-hmm. that, you know, if everything does fall apart, which is probably going to happen, then it'll look like it's his fault. But who knows what the outcome will be. I'm sure that it's all preordained and it's all perfect.
Interesting, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah.
So, and what's your website?
Radicalforgiveness.com. Mm-hmm.
And we can just go on there and go ahead and do worksheets there?
Yeah.
Oh,
America's
I love the idea.
America's Healing, I think, is the page you go to.
And I recommend that we all do that. Now, tell me about this other book you wrote, which is fiction. Or have you written other books besides that?
Well, I usually have a story in all of them, although Jill's story is not fiction. That's exactly how it happened. But mm-hmm. This book I wrote well before the Iraq War.
Oh, wow.
2002 or 3, somewhere around there. But that, you know, it was a storybook and then said, you know, about the whole purpose of this is to create heaven on earth and that we're all implicated in that and we all have a role to play and we all have a responsibility. So the idea, that's why I put on the website that you could come and do worksheets and forgive all these folks.
So this is your service, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
And is your do you have some big plans in the future? Are you going to continue with the work you're doing?
Just keep continuing to do what I'm led to do. You know, I keep writing, keep teaching, keep moving around, and doing what seems to be necessary at the time. I have written, my recent book is called Getting to Heaven on a Harley.
I love that. That is so funny.
Yeah.
That's a fiction about, is it a fiction or is it a visual?
It starts out with a story about somebody who dies in the first paragraph, having just crashed his Harley on a slippery bend, and then what happens afterwards is that he, first of all, he finds somebody to play with for a little while he's hanging out in the astral plane.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a funny part of the book. And then he and this other guy get on a Harley and speed up the tunnel of light to heaven. there he meets his angel of incarnation, and that angel of incarnation then takes him through his life review and shows him how perfect everything was that ever happened to him. So it's a radical forgiveness from the rear view mirror idea.
Do you receive visions and find inspirations in that fashion? You just made it up
for me. I'm still about your typical English mental kind of guy that doesn't get much in the way of visions. And
University of London doesn't teach that?
No.
I love the idea of getting to heaven on a Harley, though. I mean,
yeah,
that's a pretty smart
it's
thing.
It's a fun book. But the point about it is that once you've got the whole point, then it gives you a number of different exercises to do a review on your own life as if you had just died. Mm-hmm. And you're having a chance to look back at your own life and seeing how everything was perfect, how it all made sense in every way.
Have you ever been given the opportunity? It seems to me it'd be wonderful to have you at a political rally or a... No, it would be, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm not sure the Republicans would like me very much.
I don't know. There seems to be a lot of breakdown in those isolated units, like Republican, Democrat. It seems like there's a lot of wash going between the two these days.
Yeah.
Don't you think? I mean, there are people seeking evolution, and people see it all the time. people surprise themselves and they're stepping forward in consciousness.
I don't know whether you're familiar with a guy called Ainsley MacLeod. Are you?
I've seen his name. I can't remember what he is.
Sounds True published him. And I read his book and I thought it was funny. I've never mentioned it to anybody, but he says that the Republicans in general are very young souls and Democrats are very old souls.
Oh, you're kidding. Well, maybe. So what's his prognosis? Is he a fictional-inspired, fictionalized writer, or is he a...
No, he's clairvoyant. He's absolutely serious.
Really?
Absolutely.
So I guess we should
very
check him out.
Very serious guy. But that's his assessment of how it is. And that's why these new souls are not really very switched on. And concerned very much about themselves and their material wealth and that kind of thing.
Do you think that's true?
I don't know. I'm not gonna say one way or the other. But it's an interesting thesis.
Yeah. So vibrationally, I often think that the collective is working its way up to a higher and higher frequency. Like, what do you think about ETs? Do you think we're getting universal help? What do you think?
I don't know. I mean, I'm open to the idea, but I have no idea really about that. I like to think that there is something, but we certainly get guidance from somewhere.
And have you gotten a lot of information about past lives from hypnotherapy?
Yeah, I did. I used to do some regression work with people, but on the whole, it was pretty boring. There weren't many kings and queens. Mostly they were peasants.
Well, I think what's interesting is, like, if you're going to do forgiveness, some of the issues must come from, like,
you do get some bleed through. But my approach is, we have enough trouble dealing with this lifetime without bringing in all those past life ideas that people have, unless it's really obvious. And sometimes you do get a very strong indication, usually, that some death experience has bled through into this lifetime, like a fear of fire or something of that nature. But it's very rare. And on the whole, I discourage it, because I said it just makes things too complicated. And it's another way to victimize, or to get victimized, because then you're victimized by your past life.
Mm-hmm.
So,
that's true, but do you think we have like a soul's journey, and do you think people come and families are reborn in clumps of souls? Or what?
Probably. Yes, I do.
Do you feel like you know some people?
I think that's a fair assumption.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I don't have beliefs. I'm open to certain ideas and assumptions, but I don't believe in anything, because a belief puts you in a box. Then you have to defend it. So I prefer just to be in the question.
I think that's really smart, actually. Except that I do find a lot of people seem to know each other really well when they first meet, and I find that kind of intriguing.
Yeah.
And that could require, quite often that requires forgiveness way before you get into the drama that it takes to be aware that you need forgiveness. Eh?
Yeah, exactly.
Karma, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess you don't dabble in karma either.
It's an interesting idea, too. You know, all of these things are interesting ideas and fascinating to play with, as long as we don't take them too seriously. And we'll find out when we get to the other side what's true and what isn't, and we'll probably laugh and say, hey, look at what we made up.
So what about longevity? How long do you think people could live if we unhook a whole bunch of stuff?
Well, once we create heaven on earth, I guess then life becomes what it is really anyway. We are immortal souls, so we'll maybe keep our body too.
Yeah, I heard that that some beings on other galactic centers live for like 5,000 years, but we chose to break those years up in kind of chapters or increments. I sort of like that. I don't know what I believe either. But I enjoy that. That to me is a nice way to hold
it.
It is. So what's next for you?
What's next?
Movies?
I'm traveling to Europe, doing two lots of trips to Europe this coming year. So
are you going to Yugoslavia and where are you going? The same places you have your centers?
Germany and Switzerland and Italy, England.
Seems like there's a lot of spiritual action or evolutionary action in Germany these days, is there?
There is. Yeah, they're very open to this stuff.
That's
the book is doing very well over there.
is. And you have lots of students.
Yeah. Yeah, we have, you know, groups of 150, 200 sometimes.
Do you think it's happening all over the world that people are waking up to this awareness?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Can't speak for those places I haven't been to, but I think there's a general awakening.
You don't really have to go there these days with the internet,
no.
Do you?
No.
Well, I really appreciate your time. It's been very elevating. I love your book, and I'm going to check out the website, and I'm going to do some radical forgiveness of my own.
Very good.
And I keep feeling, as you're talking about it, that we are launching ourselves by doing that, really launching our freedom and our empowerment. Hey?
Yeah.
So I thank
you for
your work.
Well, thank you for doing this.
And many blessings, and thanks for your good work in the world.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, that was very inspiring for me. Reading that book, Radical Forgiveness, has just kind of given me some energy for doing some more self-freeing so that we can move to heaven and earth inside of ourselves as well. There's no need for us just to keep running our patterns, everybody. This whole society is moving and changing. The paradigm is shifting. And Colin Tipping gave us some really strong pointers on how to egg that on, how to really help it change. This is Veronica Entwistle. I'm an intuitive and energy counselor. I love working with you. I love getting the feedback. Some of you send me such amazing commentaries on these shows. I really appreciate it, so I remind you, you can get hold of me, Veronica at veronicaentwistle.com. That's Veronica at veronicaentwistle.com. Much love.